Loveline is meant for an adult audience. Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Loveline may contain sexually oriented content.
Listener discretion is advised.
Listener discretion is advised.
Loveline. 1-800-LOVE-191.
Loveline starts now.
Hey everybody, it's Loveline. That's the number, 1-800-LOVE-191. In with us tonight, none other than Joe Rogan. Joe, thank you for joining us.
Hey.
Hey,
thanks for having me.
Fear Factor, sixth season. I can't believe that.
You can't believe it.
How many shows do you do a year?
It depends on the year. This year we only did 22. Last year we did 34.
Last time I was up here, I remember you saying, and maybe you don't want to admit this on radio.
I'll admit anything. I don't
but
care.
That it's only a matter of time before somebody trips and falls and breaks their skull open on a curb or something, let alone actually has a serious accident.
I think we might have gotten through the entire show without anything like that happening because I have a feeling it's over.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we're at the sixth season now, and the ratings suck. We're getting crushed by American Idol because they moved us to Tuesday night.
Well, maybe they can move you at a better time.
Maybe, maybe not. But
it just gets more playmates in there.
No?
Strippers? Go strippers.
Strippers. We call them waitresses. We like to refer to them as waitresses. We don't ever admit that they're strippers. You never see, like, the job description and occupation.
I totally fell for it. I was like, those are strippers. Yeah, no, you're right. It's receptionist. You're right. Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
In school, student is another good one. They're perpetual students.
Where are the guys from? I see where the girls are from.
They're all like personal trainers,
right?
Or something
right.
Like that, you know,
that makes sense.
Or you know, there's a lot of regular people too. You know, I always tell people that 20% of the people on the show are just unbearable, but the other 80% are just people that are just trying to have a good time.
Oh, that's nice. Just get on TV.
All right, yeah. But like I said, I think it's probably over.
How'd you like doing the man show?
Producers don't want to admit that. You know what? That was a tremendous mistake. Not that it was a mistake to do it, but it was definitely a mistake to do it while I was doing Fear Factor. And it was also a mistake not to consult with Adam and Jimmy and find out what the magic formula was.
Yeah.
No, the behind the scenes dealing with the producers and being lied to about what you can and can't get away with. Basically, what they said to us is they came up to me and they said, listen, just do anything. You know, do nudity. We'll blur it out. Swear. We'll beep it out. We don't care what you talk about. We want to get sued. And I was like, really?
Comedy Central said that?
Yeah,
or the producers
no,
said that?
The producers. The yeah. producers said that.
I could just so you get a sense of what actually went on there, I can remember going over there and visiting Adam and him having lengthy arguments with Comedy Central standards and practices people about whether or not he could say underpants.
Oh, we had a huge argument about a sketch that we did called Make Me Hard, okay? And this was the sketch where you take a guy and we put an electronic box.
What could they? It's crazy, right?
Well, here's the crazy argument. The electronic box would go over the guy's, you know, groin area. And when
it's called a penile tumescence monitor.
Okay. Yeah. And when he supposedly got an erection, a red light would go on, which, of course, we would control. And so in front of him, we had a bunch of things happening, like strippers and guys eating bananas and all sorts of different things. And we had a transsexual. And he didn't know it was a transsexual. And it's pre-op, so, I mean, she's beautiful.
Yeah.
And so she's going through her whole thing, and she's, you know, she's dancing for him, and the crowd's going crazy. And then she pulls down her panties and reveals...
To the audience.
Yes, this diseased, withered little thing that's been pumped full of female
estrogen.
Hormones. Oh. And so it's black. It looks like a penis that's been poisoned, right?
No, that's, wilted the penis.
Audience.
Oh,
okay,
my God.
But here's where it's crazy. They didn't have a problem with any of that. Well, they had a problem with
was
the word hard. Oh. They wanted to change it to make me stiff. That was their big note.
Stiff's more offensive.
Well, it's dumb. It's stupid. I mean, it's like
you
hard is
you
hard is
just
a
gone
funny
for
word.
It's like fine. Stiff is just more offensive.
We did call it
fine.
Stiff. Great. But it just that's how ridiculous and asinine
I think,
their input
somebody
was.
Somebody has stolen television executives' brains.
Well,
something happened.
You got to realize
the fear of the government and stuff. I think really getting to
that's,
them.
That's
I really
a huge
do.
That was a huge problem with the Man Show as well because that happened right after the Janet Jackson nipple thing, and we lost a ton of things. We wanted to do a whole monologue on abortion and a whole there's a bunch of other stuff that we wanted to do. They were just horrified and scared of everything, which is so strange.
Really, it's
to
a
me.
Weird
that
time,
whole
right?
thing was so bizarre.
I did an interview with somebody the other day who was telling me about how well Brokeback Mountain is doing in the red states. And I thought, I'm sure you tour around the country.
Yeah.
And people are just people. You know what I mean? They're just like you.
Well,
just...
I think the internet is having a big effect on people's perceptions. I think the internet is dissolving a lot of boundaries, and the red states aren't necessarily the flyover states anymore because everyone kind of has access to the same information with all these people.
I totally agree with you, but even so, the sort of notion that because they voted so out of fear,
of
war and terrorism, that made them religious conservatives.
Yeah.
That's not what they are.
There are a lot of religious conservatives.
Of course there are.
I'm always a little shocked.
But even they are rather socially a little more liberal than the press would have it possible.
Brokeback Mountain is a hilarious movie. If you can
deal with
it.
The comedy hit of the season.
That's what I say. That's what I've been saying in my act.
It's the feel good.
If you can deal with the whole thing, you know, and it's like, you know that there's guys that are gay. You know that there's guys that are kids. Everyone knows.
Really?
But watching it
with the Cowboys too,
actually seeing it happen.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't want to. I can't.
You know,
go into depth, but I can tell you what.
You know, there's actually a You can use this in your thing too. there's actually a biological thing that happened in men, and it's been actually documented in functional MRI scans, where when men see images of nude males or men in acts, straight men, they get a biological threat response. You don't feel it, but your brain goes, oh, like red light.
Right.
And it's very similar to like what they would see if they were like looking at their parents. You know what I mean? It's
right.
That same kind of,
Yeah,
that's the same experience.
It's like getting tasered.
Yeah. And why it's that way, it's bizarre, right?
Yeah. I
mean, like, women don't have that when they look at women.
There's a scene in the tent where this one guy spits on his unit and just, you know, what he does with it. And I, you know, obviously I'm trying to dance around for the radio, the whole place just went, oh! Like, you hear people in the audience just go,
masturbating,
oh.
Or he's putting it somewhere?
No, he's putting it somewhere.
Oh, that's nice.
I mean, this is the first sex scene that these guys have together, and that's how it starts off. He spits on it, and it's
what are you
going to
do?
Whoa.
You're out in the desert in a tent?
That is the proven method. But
it's not proven, approved. Approved method.
Proven effective. But it's just, whoa, you watch it, it's hard to deal with.
Where are you from originally?
I was born in New Jersey, I grew up in Boston.
Whereabouts in Boston?
I lived in Newton, I lived in...
That's upscale town.
That's the nice area I lived in. I lived in Waltham, Revere, Medford.
That's all nice.
A couple places.
Revere is pretty
shaky. That's when I first moved out and didn't have any money.
But isn't Boston University over there by Revere?
I used to actually teach Taekwondo at Boston
University. How interesting.
Boston University isn't in Revere now. No, it's in Boston.
And you lived out in Revere. I think I used to take the red line from there out to Revere or something.
There you go.
I went to college. Thank you. It was a moth that's attacking us. I went to college in Massachusetts. So I have a fond attachment to that state. How'd you go from New Jersey to Boston?
My parents. You know.
What'd your dad do?
My dad was a computer programmer, and then he later became an architect, and we moved around the country as he went to grad school and did all that stuff.
Does he go to school in Boston? Is that how you ended
He went there? To Boston Architectural Center.
And your mom, was she working, or she?
No, she just chills now.
You seem more New Jersey than Boston.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know what that is. I lived around a lot of Bostonians. They're a little more... I don't want to use anything too pejorative, but you seem more creative, more smart.
Boston,
you know what I mean?
Boston is a strange
little
place.
There's a narrow perspective in Boston.
Well, I attribute it to the climate.
It's so cold.
I think that's a horrible way to live. Yeah. You know, we're 6 months out of the year. It sucks. I mean, it really sucks. It's really cold at least 5 months out of the year where it's horrible. And
I didn't find the summer so great. It's hot
bitter.
As hell and rains all the time.
And all anybody wants to do is watch sports and drink. They live for hockey and baseball.
Boston's obviously a very diverse community. There's 18 schools for every person that lives
there. It's the highest per capita place in the country for universities.
I love Bostonians too. I'm being pejorative, but still, just saying.
No, dude, I'm with you, man. Look, my friends, I went back to Boston to do stand-up, and I brought a bunch of my buddies with me, and I'm like, dude, people are a-holes around here.
There's a certain group, and you sort of have a vibe about you that you'd come from that group if you had lived there as a young person. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The New Jersey part of you, the equivalent of the New Jersey part of you that is represented in Boston, you know what I'm talking about?
Right.
Would be a more problematic person.
I think if I was dumb and if I wasn't curious and if I stayed there and I hung out with the wrong people, I easily could have been one of those.
You got anything coming up?
You know what? Right now I'm just doing a lot of stand-up comedy.
Buddy Andy Dick much anymore?
I see him every now and then.
Really?
You know, I talk to him every now and then.
He was up here.
He MySpaced me the other day.
He was up here a couple months ago, and he gave me, speaking of Brokeback Mountain, he gave me a lot of detail about his
gay sex.
Yeah, and what it is and why guys do it. And in that discussion, I had a lot of bewilderment about the whole anal sex stuff. And this brings us to our first call tonight. This guy's name is Jason. He's 25. Jason. Oh, he's waiting. All right, buddy. You're on the air with Joe Rogan. Are you there?
Go ahead.
All right, Jason. You're on with Joe Rogan. I'm Dr. Drew. What's up?
Hey, I had to ask you, what happened to Dave Chappelle, by the way, Joe? Ever since?
What happened?
He went away.
I'm pretty sure that what happened to him is probably a more accelerated version of what happened to us. I mean, he got tired of dealing with... When I did his show, I remember one of the conversations that we had about it was he was talking about the N-word, the use of the N-word, how Comedy Central was telling me couldn't use it anymore and how ridiculous it was. And, you know, they were just constantly trying to give him notes, I think. And I think he just didn't want to do it anymore.
Okay.
That's what my take on it is.
The second thing was for you, Dr. Drew. Well, yeah. Why are you bewildered by men who want to have anal sex?
Because I don't have a shred of that impulse in me, and so it's hard for me to get my head around it. So you enlighten me. I like to understand people, and so this is one that I'm trying to get my head around. So go ahead, Jason. This is your chance. Enlighten me.
I think maybe the act that is impure or deemed socially negative.
See, for me, there's nothing about sex that encompasses anything impure or unacceptable or just me personally, or dirty or whatever. That just doesn't even get into the lexicon for me. So for somebody to bring that in to say that's exciting, I can't get it. Joe, maybe you can help me.
Different strokes for different folks.
You don't have any of that?
Not hurting anybody. Who cares? That's how I think. No, it's not.
But you talk really negative on it.
Me? I'm not talking. Well, listen, I'm worried about people hurting. It can hurt people, Jason. That's where I get a little
negative. It can. What? But I think if done correctly.
Yeah, absolutely.
Jason, listen. Are you a big proponent of anal sex?
I was always wondered why he was so anti.
Listen. I think people project stuff onto me when they say I'm so whatever. Whatever people are into, I'm interested in because I'm interested in people. Yeah. I'm worried. Here's what I'm not into. Women subjecting themselves to things that hurt that they get nothing out of. That I'm not into. If a woman is into it and likes it, fantastic.
There are whatever. Girls who like that,
too. Yes, enjoy, whatever. Okay. But the other ones are doing it to please their boyfriends and nothing else, and they're going through a painful experience that could cause them harm. That bugs me.
Dude,
does
your girlfriend give you a lot of, well, Dr. Drew says.
Well, that's why he's pissed.
Is that what's going on?
Hey, say that again, Joe.
Does your girlfriend give you a lot of, well, Dr. Drew says it's sick.
It's bad for me.
Does she say that?
Yeah, she hooks it up.
Oh, okay.
Oh, no, she hooks it up for him.
That's not she likes exactly it. What I meant.
No. All right, that's good. What do you do, Jason? Just to be funny. What do you do for a living?
Consulting.
Business consulting?
IT consulting.
IT. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, good. Thanks for the call. All right, buddy.
Take it easy, dude.
Let's go to, this is Alicia, 21. You're on with Joe Rogan, Alicia.
Dr. Drew, oh my goodness, I admire your work so much.
You are so kind. You admire Joe Rogan. Tech may come as a shock to you that you can't say the S word or the F word on the radio. I don't know how many times.
As ridiculous as it is in 2006, there are bad words.
Okay, well, all right. But anyway, we'll let you be just.
We'll tell your boyfriend I said thank you.
While the radio is resetting, no more of that, okay? No more of that S coming out of your mouth, okay?
I promise.
Okay, what's happening?
Well, I saw you at Cal Poly. I saw you actually giving a seminar there. That was really great.
Years ago?
Probably like 4 years ago.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was back
in the lunchroom, in some kind of lunchroom there at the Cal Poly.
It was in the lunchroom, and there was like a person standing behind like a screen, so you could only see a silhouette, and they were asking you questions. It was
that was not the greatest environment for a presentation, but anyway, so what's up?
Yeah. Okay. I want to know what's the name of this new prescription that's out for alcoholics. I saw you on the news talking about it very briefly a couple nights ago.
It's called Campral or a Camprasate. It's been used in Europe for a long time. It's actually used Campral. It's not as a substitute for treatment. It's just for people that are in treatment. We have found that people that take this regularly, and it's a very clean medicine with almost no side effects, many times it helps them stay sober. They're less likely to relapse when they take it. So I'm anything that really goes at the primary drive associated with this disease, I'm very interested in.
Oh. Okay. Does it help with like the cravings?
It does in some cases. I've had some cases. I use a lot of this. And sometimes people will report a really marked change in their cravings. And sometimes the part I like best is sometimes it improves their thinking. Because I'll be sitting there talking to patients. They're like, I got to go. I got to get out of here. I'm desperate. I got to work. I got this, that. Right. And you put them on the medicine. The next day I come back and they're like, oh, I was kind of crazy here. I need to, you're right. I need to be here to focus on my treatment.
So there's that kind of thing. Like, see, like, an addiction specialist to get that prescribed to you?
Well, you need to be in treatment. So, yes, you would be seeing an addiction specialist, Alicia.
Oh.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Going to meetings and stuff like that and really wants to get treatment.
Yes, that would be a reasonable situation. If
somebody
had a sponsor, is working steps, and has the support of their sponsor, that even if I were an addictionologist, were not one, I would suggest that that would be a reasonable circumstance to prescribe that.
And
okay?
Would you be like a physician to get prescribed?
Yeah, just
for
a regular doctor. Most doctors, certainly a psychiatrist, would be very well aware of it, okay?
Okay.
All right, good luck.
Fabulous. Thank you.
Is that you? Are you going to meetings?
No, it's for my boyfriend.
All right. You go to Al-Anon, all right?
Thank you.
You're already setting up his recovery for him. Evan, 17, what's up? You're on with Joe Rogan.
Hey, how's it going? I wanted to ask Joe about his beef with Carlos Mencia about Carlos being a joke stealer and stuff like that.
Well, that's, you basically just said it.
That's his beef.
He's a phony. I mean, his whole act is phony. His whole name is phony. His real name is Ned Holness. He's not Mexican. He's half German and half Honduran.
That's right.
He's been
Honduran.
A joke thief from the beginning of his career. Everyone has always despised him. He doesn't have a single comedian that's a friend. And you know what? I really didn't do anything about it until Dum Dum got on a radio station in Tucson and talked about me. And,
Carlos?
Yeah. And I call him Ned or... the phony Mexican.
I was actually listening. I live in Tucson, and
fascinating. He's a freak of nature. What he is a sad guy with a huge hole in his soul that he needs to fill up with other people's attention. And he's not a bright guy. So what he does is he takes other people's ideas and he rehashes them and tries to sell them as his own. And the real problem
he's
is
succeeding
that,
though.
That's the real problem. The real problem is comedy clubs don't do anything about it. Comedy Central doesn't do anything about it. I mean, they knew they were hiring a thief. Everyone knows that guy's a hack. He's garbage. You know,
people like the presentation, though.
Well, you know what? He fits a niche. I mean, there's a void that needs to be filled. There's not a whole lot of Latino comedians. You know, one of the funniest ones that I was friends with, Freddie Soto, he just died.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he died really recently.
Of what?
Oh, we don't know. He died in his sleep.
Oh, my God. He wasn't that old?
Yeah. No, he had sleep apnea and... A couple of things, maybe. We don't really know, but great guy. But the point is, there's not a whole lot of Latino comedians, and Latinos really strongly bond with someone who represents their people, and that's one of the grossest things about him. He doesn't use his real name, so he'll bond with Latinos. And, you know, it's just like comedy is a very difficult art form. It's very hard to get right.
Comedians already don't like each other.
Yeah.
I've noticed that.
Yeah, well, it's mostly insecurity.
Because
comedians are insecure.
There's no hierarchy. It's just
it doesn't have to be that way. You know, I think the Comedy Store right now is in a good place where there's a lot of really funny guys and everyone's really super supportive, and that's the way it should be. There's plenty of work for everybody. We should all just be having fun. And the more fun people are around you and the more funny people are around you, the better you get. But the thing is, you have to work. And guys like Carlos, they don't want to work. They're not bright enough to be creative, and they're not introspective or objective enough to see, like, really funny things about life and themselves and to have an interesting point of view. So they just hear something funny that someone else says and then just reiterate it.
What do you say, Evan, on the radio?
On the radio, he was just talking about how Joe was attacking him and stuff like that for stuff that he wasn't doing, and how he wrote all his own material and everything like that. And if I remember, the guy that was interviewing him was all like agreeing and citing his Joe, and I was like,
which is really funny considering that guy is the one who emailed me the sound clip. He told me he was just trying to get Carlos going, and then he was going to have me on, and he was trying to build this whole thing up, which I didn't buy
into.
But I did go on my website and write a post about it, just because I just don't. You know what? I didn't want to go after him for no reason, but if he wants to go after me first, I'm more than willing to throw rocks back.
Angel, 17, you're on with Joe Rogan.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. What's happening?
I actually have been going out with my boyfriend for about 3 years, and we've lived together for about 2.
Since you were 15?
Yeah.
How old is this guy? Oh, how old?
Well, I met him through my brother, which is 23.
Whoa. You're 15 now?
No, she was 15 when she moved in with him.
Yeah.
Oh. So he's a criminal.
Right now.
He's a criminal. Okay, we got that.
Well, it actually took him a long time for him to get affectionate with me at all out in public.
Yeah, they started dating when they were when she was 13, and he waited until she was 15.
You said in public, though.
In public, because he didn't want to get arrested, Angela.
Well, actually, we started going out when I was 15.
That's what I'm saying.
That's now.
I know, but still
what
illegal.
What state do you live in?
Oklahoma.
Is that legal in Oklahoma?
Not exactly.
It's only legal in, like, New Mexico or something.
Angela. Yeah. Not exactly? What the hell does that mean? It's either illegal or it isn't.
Wow.
I don't really know. Like, I've heard that they we can get in trouble for it, but if they...
You've heard that? You've heard that, what, in high school? That's great. Well, of course, it's completely illegal. You didn't have a choice?
I didn't have anywhere else to go. Like, he's the only person.
Okay. Why? What were you fleeing from? What was going on in your family of origin?
Well, I don't have any family here except for my grandparents, which is who raised me. And she kicked me out because she thought that I was, like...
Sleeping with a 20-year-old?
She thought that I was, like, hoeing around and...
Yeah, with a 20-year-old.
Drugs.
Yeah. Oklahoma, what I've got here from a... Yeah. Hang on, I've got age of consent. This is, like, about a year old. It says 16.
Mm-hmm.
16 is late.
When's your birthday?
My birthday is in May.
Are you going to have a legal party when it hits May?
No, she's 17 now.
Oh, you're 17
now? Yeah. She was 15 when she moved in with him.
Oh.
All right, so what's the question?
Okay. It's really weird because he is, he just refuses to have sex with me, basically. When we
this
first
guy's getting weirder in our eyes all the time.
Wow.
Well, he gets turned on and stuff, but he just doesn't like having sex. And I can't talk him into it. Like, I mean, I'm not trying to sound conceited, but I'm actually a model right now. I've been modeling for Tulsa, an agency there. But
for
I mean,
what?
I feel
Tulsa,
like I'm,
Tulsa.
You know, pretty attractive. And
all right, Angela, there's something that unless the guy has got some issues that are, you know, beyond what we can really dig into, you're not seemingly very aware of. Another thing that makes guys sort of shut down is a lot of drugs and alcohol. So is he just, he likes his bong more than you?
Well, he's never tried a cigarette.
So he's done nothing.
Yeah, he's never, ever done anything. Like, he doesn't even like for me to drink. Not that I do.
So he just doesn't like sex?
Yeah, I mean...
Wait, hang on. Joe's head just exploded. He just... What? Huh?
It just doesn't... So if he doesn't like sex, why did he...
Why does he have a girlfriend?
Yeah, and why is his girlfriend 17?
Right.
I can't answer that one.
Was he abused as a kid himself?
Huh?
Was he abused as a child himself?
No, he was verbally abused, yeah, because his, like, my boyfriend's 4 inches shorter than me, and his, dad used to call him midget,
all
and...
Right. So what's the question? What is the question?
Okay, I want to know what I can do to improve our relationship. I feel like it's frustrating us both, and I actually cheated on him because he just would not touch me. Like, he would never make out with me, just like it is now, and because I've cheated on him. It's made the entire situation worse. He thinks about me with the other guy.
All right, well, Angel, we have no idea. We're talking to you. We're not talking to him. Who knows what's going on with him? It's something very significant. It's not normal behavior for a 23-year-old male. And, you know, without being a chance to dig our teeth into him a little bit, it's hard to say what's going on. You cheating, you trying things, you're 17. You're not going to be able to really do much with this guy. All you can do is really get him to a professional or get out of this relationship because he's not going to change. He really is. Not based on you pleading and begging and cheating to try to coerce him into it.
Yeah, sounds like time to move on.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, what's there to leave? The guy's just the most wonderful thing she's ever had. Look, this is a life preserver for you, Angela. Find another one. I mean, if you're as attractive as you say you are, it shouldn't be that difficult for you to meet.
Especially
people.
In Oklahoma.
Yeah. All right, everybody. It's 1-800-LOVE-191. Joe Rogan is the co-host tonight. We'll be right back.
Love Line. How do you want me to say it?
Love Line will be right back.
Love Line will be right back.
Hey, everybody. Love Line. Joe Rogan in here. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. And here is a question for Joe. Bobby, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? I actually had a question for Joe. I was wondering, how'd your Ultimate Fighting career go and why'd you stop it?
Well, I never fought in the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I used to fight in Taekwondo tournaments, and I kickboxed for a little while. And I stopped doing it when I started doing stand-up comedy. I had 3 fights while I was still doing comedy, and it's just... It's
Taekwondo
something,
fights?
No, they're kickboxing bouts.
It's something that's so dangerous. You have to have all your focus on it, and it has to be something you actually want to do. When I started doing comedy, I was so drawn to doing stand-up that I wasn't focusing as much on it, and I kind of made a decision that I needed to stop. And I just always trained. I still work out and spar and stuff like that. And when the UFC came along, I wound up getting involved because they found out I was a mixed martial arts fan. And
you started as a kid doing that?
Yeah, I've been doing martial arts since I was actually like as early as I can remember.
You do sports in college?
No.
High school?
I wrestled 1 year in high school, but I really only liked martial arts. Wrestling being a martial art, I never really liked team sports.
Do you go to college?
Yeah.
Where'd you go?
I went to UMass Boston.
UMass Boston.
Yeah.
It's out kind of near the coast, isn't it, the UMass Boston, or is it?
No, UMass Boston,
Because I had UMass Amherst right near to my college. I was at Amherst College, and UMass Amherst back in the day had like about 3,000 students. Now it's got like 27,000 or something.
Huge, yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, it's
and
huge.
UMass Boston was always big.
Yeah, well, I stayed in Boston because I was training at the time when I was in college. I was still fighting in tournaments and stuff, and I had to stay like close to my Taekwondo school, and I didn't want to go to a party school. I wasn't really I didn't drink at all like when I was in college or in high school.
Making up for lost
very,
time.
Very rarely.
Wendy, 26.
Hello.
Hey, what's up, Wendy? You're on with Joe Rogan.
How are you, Joe?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, I have a question. About 6 months ago, then, like, I noticed this, like, dry patch of skin on, like, my butt cheek, and I thought that it was just dry skin. It was kind of itchy. I put lotion on it. It, like, scabbed over, and it went away. Then about 3 weeks ago, then it came back again.
Right in the same spot?
Yeah, in the same spot.
Yeah.
And it feels the same. It's, like, dry skin, kind of bumpy and
itchy. Does it burn a little bit?
No, not really.
Just itchy.
Mainly itchy. Mm-hmm. I went to a doctor, and he
herpes?
Looked at it and said that it was herpes.
Yep, that's what that sounds like.
How do you get herpes, like, on surface skin? I thought it was, like, in your mouth or inside.
It's harder because it's difficult for the virus to penetrate normal skin as opposed to genital skin or mouth or eye. It can get in your eye, too. But it can, and butt cheek is a rather common place. Yeah, it's herpes simplex, and you might want to see a dermatologist to get a confirmation of that.
Can I, get it on my shoulder and stuff then?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't tend to, it tends not to be autologous in terms of it being something you can spread around your body. Doesn't work out there. Your immune system kind of contains it where it is.
Is shingles a kind of herpes?
Shingles is a herpes virus, and this if you saw it just once, you might think shingles, but the fact that it recurs in the right exact same spot does suggest herpes simplex.
And what does shingles look like?
Shingles looks like a streak of herpes. It goes on. It's in a single distribution of a single nerve. So like a nerve that comes around the rib, say, it'll just go all the way around your body. On one side. Stays on one side.
Wow.
And it can come back, but it's a little different kind of a thing.
And so I need to, like, watch out. This is possible to spread to my...
To other people. Yeah, to
Tell
other people.
Tell him not to lick it.
Yeah, exactly. And to put his rub his penis against it. That would he'd be unhappy about that.
Okay?
Okay, all right,
thank
Wendy.
You.
All right, bye-bye. And there are ways to reduce the transmission. I was just watching a commercial time for Valtrex. It's one of the anti-herpes medication. And if you take it, you have less frequent outbreaks, you're less transmissible, and you'll like kayaking and water skiing then, because that seems to be what Valtrex does.
And running through the fields.
That's right.
Butterflies.
And oats. You'll spend your time out in the Midwest, surfing on oats. Kayla, 15.
Hey, what's up?
Kayla?
Yeah.
Hey, what's going on? You're on Joe Rogan.
Joe, I just want to let you know, before I ask my question, I still watch Fear Factor.
Fear Factor.
Cool.
Tuesdays, 8 o'clock, NBC. And
thanks,
gonna
Kayla.
Run the rest. You're all done shooting that, right?
Yeah, we're done for the season. Soundman's got a mortgage. Keep watching.
Can't. Some of the stuff, I can't imagine doing this stuff. But,
yeah, I can't either.
Do you ever do any of it?
No. I mean, I've eaten some things.
What was the most, this is the obvious question. What's the most disgusting thing that over the years?
That they've done?
That you've seen other
there
people
was
do.
One episode where we had them in a diner, and they were drinking fountain glasses filled with flies and blended maggots.
I saw that one.
Oh, that was so hard to watch.
Isn't there, I mean, when they think of these things, do they ever consider the potential of what it's going to do to them? Or?
Well, believe it or not, they run all the bugs and all the different things through a toxicology exam. They send it to a lab.
They radiate sure them or something? Or?
Well, they crush them up and they find out if it's toxic.
I see.
You know, and there's some bugs that we wanted to serve people that turned out to be really bad for you.
What'd you want to serve them?
I didn't want to serve them anything. None of the ideas are mine, but there were some bugs that they had found that they wanted to because they were horrifying looking. And then they found out that they're horrifying looking for a reason. Nature trying to warn you not to eat them.
Right. They just have a team of producers sitting around thinking of disgusting things.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. And they've done a good job keeping it up for 6 years, believe it or not.
So, Kayla, what's up?
Okay. I see a therapist every Tuesday. And, like, she helps sometimes, but they put me on Zoloft for depression.
Uh-huh.
And they keep upping it, and it's not working. Because,
How much are you taking now? What's your dose?
75 milligrams.
That's a very small dose still. So,
yeah.
I mean, by psychiatric standards anyway.
Yeah. And, I've been doing research on schizophrenia.
Yeah.
And I don't, because I've been getting different things. And sometimes I feel as if I have it.
Do you see things that aren't there?
Yeah, I do.
What do you see?
Well, sometimes I just see, like, people riding on bikes, like, in the middle of my room.
Do you do you hear voices?
No.
You just see things. Have you had a neurological exam, medical exam?
Mm-mm.
Kayla, I would strongly urge you to make sure that they do a complete medical evaluation on you before they start putting you on psychiatric meds. Because usually schizophrenia, you're a little bit young for it to come on. And while visual hallucinations are part of it, oftentimes it's a whole syndrome of delusions where you're thinking that people are out to get you or people riding bicycles in your rooms are persecuting you, or you hear voices a part of that. And this is just isolated visual hallucinations. And that, I don't know, that concerns me. It could be other things. Teresa, 24, you're on with Joe Rogan.
Hey.
Hey, what's up?
Hi. I'm calling from San Francisco. And my question is that I'm in a relationship. I've been in a relationship for 2 years. And this is really hard for me to talk about. I cheat, and when I'm doing it, I don't feel any guilt at all. After the fact, I will, like, sit and ask myself, why are you doing this? Why don't you feel that? Because I'm concerned that I'm, like, a sociopath or something, because there's, no guilt.
Do you tell your boyfriend about what you've done?
No, he would not like to know this. And I want to stop because I care about him, and I wouldn't want to lose him. But there's this, like, part of me that needs, like, male attention and seeks it out and gets, like, a lot of power from being able to get guys. And
well, that whole thing, getting guys to participate in this kind of a dance, suggests that you've been abused and that being really close to somebody is something you can't tolerate.
Well,
so what happened?
Because it's hard for me to link that.
Magically I knew it was there. Come on, I don't have a fact sheet on you. This is how people behave when they've been abused. They go out, compulsively seek people to reenact the original trauma, and when they're close with somebody, they can't tolerate that, so they have to create some distance in it or sabotage it. That's how people behave when they were abused. That's what you're doing. Yes, I know your thinking has nothing to do with that. Your thoughts are at the disposal of these crazy impulses.
Right. I heard you talking one time about how, like, a really bad trauma will, like, almost change the shape of your brain. Like,
absolutely. It changes the wiring. It changes the wiring in your brain.
And when I heard you say that, I thought to myself, my God, I probably need, like, medication or something to...
Well, what happened to you?
I was raped by two guys. And
how old were you?
I was 17.
What happened before that? What happened when you were a kid?
I don't have a very good relationship with my dad. I didn't really know him. So I was with somebody when I was raped, but after that fell apart because he couldn't handle it. And I really couldn't handle it either. And
right. Sometimes after rapes, when we'll reenact these sort of rape sort of impulses, it's like trying to gain power over sexuality, Teresa. When you felt disempowered, now you're going to act it back in the other direction by getting power over these guys and being sexual. And that's a very, very primitive and very unhealthy impulse. So all you can really say is get help for this. See somebody, see a help professional. Live in a big city. Lots of people can help you. Ezra, 34, you're on with Joe Rogan.
Hey, how's it going, Joe?
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, I just want to say I loved Fear Factory, and if it's Factory. True, it's not going to be here again, I will truly miss it. And I just had one comment. It, maybe for, like, the best ratings, you could create a show called The Beer Factory, where, like, you know, a bunch of blowout couch potatoes seriously compete for different flavors of beer.
Oh, that'd be a huge rating. Huge rating grabber.
Dude, you should be a network executive.
And, you should be. I liked you, man. You were hilarious, and I want to see more
thanks,
of you.
Man.
So you got to get back in there. Some kind of factory, something.
I'll do something else, dude. Don't worry. But thanks, man.
Do you have anything coming out?
No.
Nothing lined up.
I think I'm done. I think I just don't want to do comedy.
Just do stand-up.
I really
travel.
Do. Yeah, I'm tired of listening to people.
Do you travel a lot with it?
Yeah, I travel a lot with it. I do. I go out on the road at least twice a month, and the thing that I notice about it the most is how much fun I have. It's just so much fun.
Yeah.
And when I do Fear Factor, I mean, I'm very grateful for the job and everything, but it is a job.
You could do an HBO thing or something, have somebody film you on the road.
Yeah, maybe we'll do something like that.
This is Brandon, 19. Brandon, what's up?
Hey, Joe. I recently cheated on my girlfriend. It was in December. What's some advice? I mean, she knows about it now. What's some advice as to what I could do to help, I guess, rebuild the relationship? Because I really care about her, you know.
You can tell her he cares so much.
I did. I've been with her for 4 years.
Devastated. So, I mean,
how old are you, man?
I'm 19.
Damn, it's hard to be monogamous when you're 19.
It is difficult, but I've been there for so long, and I've lived with her for a few years. We've been through a lot of rough times together, you know.
That's not describing a relationship that you should necessarily recommit yourself to. You're describing something that's been ending for a long time, and you guys, being so young, don't know how to end it because you live together, you're playing house, you've organized your lives around each other, and you're 19. You shouldn't be doing that. You know what I mean, Joe?
Yeah.
Do you agree?
I don't know. I moved in with a chick once when I was 21. It was a nightmare. You know,
was that the youngest you've lived with someone?
Yeah.
You can't get out of it once you're
young, man.
But how did you end it? Of course.
Yeah,
How'd you get out?
I don't know. We figured out a way to crush each other. But we became friends.
Taekwondo fight on the parking lot.
We were friends after it was over until she got a new boyfriend. He couldn't deal with us being friends.
But it's the thing with under the age of 24, maybe even 28, you get involved in these relationships, or you think they're the end of the world, super intense, and you can't imagine living without that person. It goes on for multiple years beyond that, which it should, because you don't know how to end, you don't know the signs of a thing we're ending, you're playing house, you don't know how to wrap it up.
And you don't know what is your brain and those weird chemicals just playing tricks on you, and your libido, and what's that, and what is actually like an interesting relationship where you actually relate to each other, where, you know, you enjoy her personality and the way she thinks, and she likes, you know, talking to you, and you guys like going to movies and talking about it afterwards. I mean, how many people even have a relationship like that? Most relationships are just a mess.
See,
you know, it's just people
that. It's just there's minor complications like me cheating on her. This is the first time.
That's the only complication in the relationship?
Pretty much so far. I mean, we've been getting along great. We broke up once before, but that was in high school and it didn't really count. I mean, I would say that our relationship's been serious for the past year and a half.
Well, listen, dude, if you get along great with her and, you know, and you guys actually really enjoy each other's company, it'll all smooth out.
No
She'll
way.
Forgive you. She likes
That's
you.
That's not you said you would be. No way.
Yeah,
Brandon.
I don't want to get to the point to where she wraps me around her finger because of what I did, you know?
Oh, is that what she's doing? Is she using it against you?
Okay, now she wants another dog. She wants me to feed her horses for a month. She's made this list of stuff in order
to get
pay back? Yeah.
Really? That's fascinating. I bet she probably likes the fact that you did it.
Right, it's a specific exchange for acting out.
When you guys got back together again after she found out about it, was the sex better?
We never broke up because of it.
You broke up?
We never broke up because of it.
You never broke up. But when, you know, when you made up, was the sex better?
We're not having sex yet.
You're not having sex?
Well,
she's holding it back?
Yeah, he's got to feed some more horses.
He's got to feed some horses and get her a dog. How long has this been going on, man?
I did it last month. She found out about 3 days ago.
Okay, so it's only been 3 days.
It's just the beginning.
Yeah, it's only been about 3 days. So.
Well, call back and tell if the sex got better.
I think this thing is doomed. Joe Rogan in the studio. Joe's going to be seen at the House of Blues on Saturday, February 4th. I didn't know they had stand-ups at the House of Blues.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It's
February 4th
in Vegas.
Check it out. Tickets through Ticketmaster. Also, Fear Factor Tuesday at 8 o'clock NBC. Phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191, and we'll be right back with more Loveline.
Yeah, Loveline.
Loveline will be right back.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, it's Love Line. I'm depressed now. I've been talking to Joe for 5 minutes. I want to go kill myself.
I was just telling him the world is on its way to an end.
The whole world or just this country?
The whole world. I think human beings. I think human beings are... this is my real theory about human beings, is that I believe that we are a very complicated form of bacteria and that we exist to devour the planet. And I'm not just being cynical, but I'm being really serious. If I was objective, if I was an alien, I was looking at this Earth from a distance, you know, besides seeing this, you know, enormous gene swarm, what do you see? Well, you fly over, like, mountains and everything. You fly into L.A. and you see, like, the beautiful ocean. And then you see L.A. Doesn't that look like cancer? I mean, it's brown and it stinks and smoke comes out of it and it gets bigger every year. Right. And no one's doing anything to stop it. And it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's like mold on a sandwich. I mean, when you open up a refrigerator and you see a sandwich that's got mold on it, how do we know that each individual mold spore doesn't have his own personality and think he's like the coolest mold spore ever and has
itself,
a huge ego and, you know, he's going to eat more of the sandwich every day to, you know, impress all the other mold spores? I mean, we don't know, you know. What we see is a city, but what I see is mold. And I have a feeling that that's really what we do. Because, I mean, you look at the disdain that we have for the environment and how ridiculous people are and how we want to believe things that make no sense, and we will fight to the death to have those beliefs that make no sense. We will kill people who abort babies. You know, I mean, they'll kill doctors, you know, who abort babies to protect the baby. I mean, it's the logic behind human beings is astounding. And I think it's that we are preserving bad behavior, dumb, ridiculous behavior. And I think that's for a reason, because dumb, ridiculous behavior enables us to keep this cycle going.
It's Joe Rogan. He's the feel-good host of the century.
I think we are bacteria.
And so be it. There's a question for you, Mr. Microbiologist. This is Shaw, 19.
Hey, Joe. How's it going? I'm a huge, huge fan. Actually, I'm your huge friend. Actually, I'm a friend of yours on MySpace.
Oh, cool, dude. Thanks, man.
He was just talking about his MySpace friends.
Yeah.
I have a lot of MySpace friends.
I really talk to them. Yeah, you do, actually.
I
hit you up and told you about a thing called going Joe Rogan on someone.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's you? Oh, that's funny, man.
Yeah, dude. I think it's hilarious. And
you want to explain it?
What's going Joe Rogan?
Joe Rogan had a meeting with a woman named Lydia Lynch outside the Comedy Store.
Lydia Lunch, yeah.
Lydia Lunch, whatever. Crazy chick, whatever her name is. And basically went crazy on her. And I think the quote that I use with all my friends is dopey dum-dum talk. You said whatever she was saying was dopey dum-dum talk. She said
what
you
happened? Yeah. Who is she?
Well, this is what happened. She was a friend of a friend, and she came to see me at the Comedy Store. And afterwards, I don't know what it is about her, but she's very insecure, obviously. But she wanted to say that she enjoyed it and she had a good time, and she wanted to tell me about all the stuff that she does. You know, like all her little performance things. She does, like, you know, performance, whatever. It's just some sort of a one-woman show or something like that. And then she started insulting me. And then she started, like saying that she was going to burn me with a cigarette.
Wait, give me an example.
Listen to her. I don't even remember because it was so ridiculous. And I'm like, why? And she was saying she was going to hit me. I was like, what are you talking about? Why are you saying you're going to hit me? Like, what is this? And then I said, you know, what you're doing, this is dopey dum-dum talk. That's what you're doing right here. You're a dummy. Do you realize that? Do you realize what you're doing? I mean, I know you think you're smart, and I broke her down.
It was hilarious, and it's called going Joe Rogan on someone. So whenever someone does any of my buddies, I call it going Joe Rogan on someone. Anyways, my question was actually about DMT.
Excuse me?
Tryptamine.
Oh, okay.
The drug DMT. I don't know, like, I've heard you talk about it, and I saw the thing on...
Sorry. Well, this is what DMT is. What DMT is it's a human neurotransmitter that's produced by your pineal gland. It's supposedly produced by your pineal gland. They know it's produced by the brain and the blood and the liver, and they believe that it's produced by the pineal gland. There's a book on it.
Tryptophan or
dimethyltryptamine.
Tryptamine.
Yeah, it's related to tryptophan, actually. It's also related to melatonin. It's related to 5-methoxydimethyltryptamine, which is a cousin of it. And what it is, and this is where it's really crazy, it's the most potent psychedelic known to man. I mean, it blows away psilocybin, MDMA, any of the other stuff that you want to try. It's so powerful. Yet, it's produced by our own brain. I mean,
well, everything that your brain responds to, I mean, you know, all the stuff we give people's brain to make a brain response, there are receptors there because your brain creates stuff that binds to those receptors. I mean, everything. Whether it's pot or whatever.
But cannabinoid receptors receive cannabis. But this is an actual substance that your brain produces. I mean, it goes through the brain-blood barrier, and your cerebrospinal fluid and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Well, when you're doing this, when you have this, when you take this drug, you have these insane psychedelic experiences where you feel like you are in another dimension and you are communicating with intelligent entities.
Mm.
And it is really profound and mind-blowing and bizarre. And the crazy thing is they've done all these tests on cerebrospinal fluid and DMT, and they found that your brain produces the highest doses of this stuff while you're asleep.
Hmm.
During heavy REM sleep.
Maybe that's where the dreaming comes from.
Well, that's what they think. This is the idea is that when we're asleep, we penetrate into realms that we have little or no memory of. And that these experiences, and when you do DMT, one of the craziest things, you go into this dimension, and I mean, it's insane geometric patterns and, you know, and self-transforming entities. These things, like Terrence McKenna called them self-transforming machine elves. And what it's like is like these, Timothy Leary referred to them as molecular robots. It's like these things that are like intelligent entities that are communicating with you. And it's really strange and profound. But what the weirdest thing about it is how fleeting the memory is. It's such an intense, incredible memory, but it's like your brain is protecting you from this memory. Well, there's a guy named Dr. Rick Strassman out of the University of New Mexico, and he did a bunch of clinical studies with DMT, and he wrote a book called DMT, the Spirit Molecule. And it was his finding that the most profound experiences were all when they gave it to people intravenously. They had the longest experiences, and they also remembered almost nothing when they came out of it.
We gotta keep this conversation going. We get back. Phone number 1-800-LOVE-191. We'll be right back.
If you need help,
call Loveline 1-800-LOVE-191.
That's right. It's Loveline. Joe Rogan in here tonight, telling me some very interesting stories. Very interesting.
Yeah, dimethyltryptamine is a pretty incredible thing. It's very bizarre. What I was just explaining is that and to anybody who's interested in this, there's a book called The Spirit Molecule by a guy named Dr. Rick Strassman, who did a bunch of clinical studies out of the University of New Mexico. And one of the craziest things that they found about this substance, this human neurotransmitter, is that the higher the doses, the more profound the experience was, but the less the person could remember it. And so they had these insane trips where they were communicating with these beings, and they were learning all this stuff about, you know, life and the cosmos and reality. And when it was over, they remembered nothing. The same as you every day when you wake up from a sleep, you know, and you sleep, you know, your brain is flooded with dimethyltryptamine.
I'm looking at some of the stuff you've done. You were on Howard Stern's radio show. Are you going to go on his new radio show?
Sure.
Has he been invited up?
I haven't been in New York, but I've been in a bunch of times.
All right, let's take a call. This is Sam 17, the female Sam.
Hi. My question is kind of embarrassing, this question. But I started having sex when I was 13, and what I noticed gradually started happening is my lips on my vagina started getting, like, bigger. Like, not swollen, but, like, longer and stuff. Like, I don't know, I was hanging out with one of my friends like a year ago, and he was talking about some chick that had like lips that looked like a turkey neck, and like ever since then, like, I can't stop but to think like that's what mine looks like, and I have no idea what that would be from.
That would be normal.
Normal?
It's no big deal.
Some women have that. It's the inner lips are a little bit bigger than the outer, and they kind of pooch out.
I actually like it.
See?
So don't worry about it.
It started happening after I started having sex.
No, you're associating with that. It's just the fact that you're getting older. That's when that tends to happen. The fact, though, that you're having sex at 13 is a little bit of a concern, I got to tell you. But why. And the fact that you would blame your sort of anatomy on early sexual acting out is also kind of evidence that you weren't ready to be doing that.
Yeah, I wasn't at all.
No. Okay. Well, don't blame yourself for what you got. There actually are operations to improve that. There are these labioplasties that are done with lasers. They're pretty elegant procedures. So there's all kinds of stuff that can be done if it really bugs you. But guys like Joe are just into it. And most guys, and if you're not into it, most guys, again, most guys, if you're having sex with them, that's it. That's it.
Any guy who cares is a loser.
All right, Sam?
All right, thanks.
All right, feel better.
I think she feels better.
Bye. All righty. This now is Felicia, 18.
Oh, hi, Dr.
Felicia, you're on with Joe Rogan.
Oh, hi, Joe.
Hey.
Okay. I have a problem, like, being in a relationship with a guy or keeping in touch with him after, like, I've hooked up with him. Like, I just don't want to, like, have any, like, I don't want to talk to them after that.
You feel guilty?
I don't know. I just don't want to associate with them anymore.
Do you just not want relationships right now?
Well, like, I do, but, like, I'm kind of scared.
What are you afraid of?
I don't know.
That you're going to get close to somebody and you're going to be vulnerable, maybe get hurt? Just guessing.
Maybe you're dating losers. And then you're just really horny and then you hook up with them and you go, God, this guy's a loser. And then after it's over, you just don't want to have anything to do with them.
Yeah, they're probably all losers.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Find yourself
solved.
A winner, girly. Just
have, and maybe have a relationship before you have sex with these guys.
Like, make sure don't you, listen to him. Listen.
Make sure you're unless it's Joe. Then make sure you have condoms. What do you,
you have, it's, I think you have good instincts.
What though. Are you using for birth control?
I don't use birth control.
Oh, wow. How dare I? How to suggest something like that?
How intelligent
right,
of you.
Condoms, birth control.
I was just going to tell you how smart you are by rejecting these guys. You just... Well,
were you the Taekwondo championship champion of Boston or Massachusetts?
I was Massachusetts State Taekwondo champion.
That's crazy.
4 years in a row,
that
and is, I won the U.S. Open once.
That is crazy. Do you ever a teacher?
Did I have a
or
teacher?
You, no, were you a teacher?
Yeah,
you,
I taught at Boston University.
At Taekwondo?
Yeah, and I had my own school.
Wow.
That's what I did before I was a comedian.
How'd you get into comedy?
Gallows humor. My buddies that I used to fight with in tournaments, everyone was always nervous. We'd fly to these tournaments. I mean, these tournaments are full contact tournaments, so guys got knocked out all
what'd
the
you
time.
Would you stand up in front of stage in front
no,
of all these Taekwondo
guys?
We
would be in the locker room, and I'd just be cracking jokes. You know, we'd be on the bus or the plane flight out there to these tournaments, and I would just always, you know, make jokes.
So that's how you learned you liked it. How did you go from that to doing it?
They talked me into it. My friend
Ed
Shorter.
Now you sound like the supermodel going,
no, really.
Oh, my friends, they talked me into going
no,
to
I'm
these
really,
contests.
I'm, no, this is the rationale. My friend Ed Shorter and my friend Steve Graham, they talked me into it because they kept saying, dude, you're so funny, you should be a comedian. I said, you think I'm funny because you know me.
Right.
Like, other people don't think I'm an a-hole. Like, I'm not funny like Jerry Seinfeld funny. I'm offensive. But, you know, but then I saw Sam Kinison on TV, and this was like 1986. I started doing comedy in 1988. And I saw Sam Kinison, and I went, whoa, wait a minute, maybe I can do it. I was like, this guy's offensive too, because I had always associated comedy with what I had seen on television. Besides Richard Pryor, most of it was like
Carlin.
You know what I'd seen on television, like Evening at the Improv stuff, you know, it was all squeaky clean.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
That was the 80s when the
right.
comedy boom was going on.
Yeah. Know? And is that what convinced you to get up on a stage at a comedy club? Or what'd you do?
My buddies convinced me to go to an open mic night, and I was horrified. It was really crazy because you think, you know, someone who's been fighting, you know, for 10 years.
And cracking up a bunch of, you know, guys that crazy
psychos,
guys.
Yeah,
psychos that want to kill
but
each other.
I was terrified. That was probably the most scared I've ever been before I did anything. It was the first night I did stand-up.
Where were you?
I almost chickened out.
Where was it?
Stitches in Boston. Jonathan Katz, who's a very funny guy, was the host that night. August 27th, 1988.
Where is Stitches?
It's in Boston on Comm Ave. It was on Comm Ave. It's gone now. But right before I was going to go on, I was so scared. I was totally, I had my friends in the audience and everything, and I was going to say, listen, forget it. You know, I swear to God, I had a voice in my head, you know, whether it was my subconscious or whatever, said, come on, dude, this is what you're supposed to do. Go up there and do it. And
you
I did it. No, I did not kill. I was not funny. I was barely adequate for an open mic night, but I saw it, you know, I'm like, ooh, I think I can do this. You know, like when I did it, I was like, okay, this isn't something that's going to come easy. You know, this isn't.
But you liked it.
But I'm like, I think I can do it. It's like, I got some laughs. I mean, I definitely wasn't good, but I got some laughs and I saw there was a road ahead.
Right.
And I'm like, I think I can do this. Whereas before that, I mean, I was teaching martial arts and that was good and everything like that. But, you know, the only reason why I was teaching really is because I wanted to somehow or another make a living off of what I was doing.
Right.
And I liked fighting, but I didn't like the whole fact there was no future to it. And in comedy, I saw a future.
And how'd that work out? How'd you go from that night to
I started doing open mics, and then eventually, about 6 months in, I realized I had to make a commitment, and that's when I quit fighting. And I just 6 months in, I just did just comedy. I quit my job. I stopped teaching at BU. I used to.
Would you just start writing comedy all day and go out?
No, I worked. You know, I had to get jobs, but I needed my nights off. You know, and I didn't want to half-ass my whole teaching thing. I mean, teaching is very important to me, and martial arts is very sacred to me. Like, to me, it's like to do it right is the only way to do it. And there's no way I was going to teach someone and not be paying attention and not be, you know, enthusiastic and into it and not devote 100% of my attention to. So when I realized that I couldn't devote 100% of my attention to it, I just got jobs and I drove limos and delivered newspapers and did all kinds of stuff and then did open mic nights.
You're still in Boston, and how'd you come out
of here? I got discovered by a guy named Jeff Sussman, who's my manager to this day.
In Boston?
Yeah, he found me when I was an open mic comedian. Wow. He's a manager, and he came in from New York, and he said, "You want to move to New York and be a comedian?" I said, "Yeah, let's do it." So I moved to New York.
Crazy.
I'd been doing comedy at the time, like, I think about 2 years. And so then I moved to New York, and I got on MTV. I did a little stand-up comedy show called The Half-Hour Comedy Hour. And from that, I got a development deal with Disney, of all people. And I wound up doing a TV show called Hardball, which was a horrible show that was on Fox. It was a baseball show. It started off really funny, but then the network executives
got a hold of it.
And brutalized it. And that was canceled. And then I went from that to doing news radio. And I did that for 5 years. And then Fear Factor.
Do you have siblings?
I have one sister.
What's she doing now?
She's a mom, just chilling back in Boston. Boston.
And your dad's still an architect out there, is he?
He is actually an architect now in Florida.
Florida. And your mom with him still?
Just chilling, there? Yeah.
Just chilling in Florida. Yeah. In Miami or?
No, Clearwater.
Clearwater. Is she a Scientologist?
No, not at all, no.
Isn't that the big Scientology center? Yeah.
No, they were raised Catholic and they gave it up.
Good times.
And they wised up.
Gene, 23, I'm with Joe Rogan.
Hi. My question is, right now I'm seeing a guy who wants me to fist myself, but I find that kind of difficult.
I know. I think everybody finds that difficult, except a few girls on the internet. It's a very rare breed that can accomplish that.
I can pretty much get it in there.
Oh, don't do it. That guy's an idiot. Don't be fisting yourself. Why does he want you to do that? Does he want you to stretch it out?
I guess.
It's a trick. He's going to, once you stretch it out, he's going to go, "You're all loose.
I need a new girlfriend."
What? Like, he really, like, every time he's like, "Do it, try it." And
oh, God.
What if he asked you to, like, do something else, like, you know, something horrible?
Or,
I don't want to give any suggestions.
Something else really horrible.
What? You just do it?
I mean, he hasn't really. I mean, that's like the most extreme thing he's ever.
Now, is it like, are you guys drunk when he's doing this? Is he laughing or? Is he turned on?
No, he's like dead serious.
He's turned on by it?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Are you turned on by it?
I mean, if it turns my partner on, it kind of gets me off. It's not like something like I want to do just because I think it's pleasurable.
Do you have like really tiny hands or something?
No.
Have you had children?
I think that might be helpful. No, I don't have any children.
Does he call his friends immediately after he gets you to do this?
Dude, you're not going to believe this.
I don't think so.
She did it again. She did it again. You can't believe what she does.
Up to the thumb knuckle.
I just
asked
her to do it, and she does it. It's incredible, dude.
Well,
they're laughing their asses off. Jane, I don't know what, you know, if you only understood how a man's brain works,
what
you would never consider doing things like this.
What is the question?
Well, my question was, is there any way to... I can pretty much almost get it in there, but...
You want some help? You know what you need? A shoehorn and a bottle of Vaseline.
So is how do you dislocate your shoulder? Is that what you're going to ask? So you bring it around.
Make it more expandable. I don't know what the wording is.
You're just trying to... You're calling up so that you can please your boyfriend by fisting yourself. That is amazing. What a good girl for you. I'm gonna clap for you. You're a good kid.
Is there anything he could ask you to do that you wouldn't do?
Probably. But
you need to start asking him stuff like that.
Yes. You know? He needs a little payback.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's think of something.
See how many fingers he can get up his butt. Say, look, I'll try to fist myself. I'm going to try, but I want you to try as well.
No, give him, he needs to put an object up there, you know, like a tennis ball can or something. Something that he can't squirm out of because of his inability to reach. You know what I'm saying?
Make a compromise.
Yeah, Gene, I don't know. You know, it just sounds awful.
Hilarious.
You're not into it. It doesn't do anything for you. He has the eye of the tiger when you're doing it, but believe me, he's just taking notes so he can tell all his buddies. You need to understand that, you know, guys are diabolical. I don't know what to say. Let's take a more serious call. It's Anthony, 21.
Hey, Dr. Drew.
Hey, what's up, Anthony?
I know you enjoy your show and then both of you guys. I got a question about heart problems and irregular heartbeats.
Yeah, give me a break. Get me out of the fisting conversation, please. Let's have a medical call.
I was trying to listen to the radio and listen to this. I kind of got scared, but
scared.
Yeah. Yeah, firstly, I'm not into
that's what gave me the palpitations hearing Gene or fisting. You want to say that again? What?
I said I know guys and girls that are both into that, but it kind of
really
me, so
really?
I stay away from it.
You know people?
Guys are into it, not to doing it to themselves.
Right.
But it's just kind of scary nonetheless.
They want to do that to their girlfriends?
Yeah, I'm not into that.
That's crazy.
I mean, my girlfriend, on the other hand, she's more...
Help me. We started out the show talking about how I can't get my head around anal sex. I can't get my head around this one either.
I'm with you on this one.
I mean, stuff that hurts women.
Yeah.
My girlfriend likes being choked, and it kind of scares me, but that's not the question.
Uh-oh.
I dated a girl like that.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, she loves being tied up, and I'm like...
What is that? Uh-oh.
I'm not really sure if I like it, but I don't know.
Is it always abuse when a girl likes getting choked, or is it maybe just likes alpha male gorilla sex?
Well,
just
it's usually...
just wants to be dominated.
I don't know, she really likes it. Like, I don't know.
Anthony can't stop talking. He's going to answer all your questions.
I don't know. Because she likes the whole thing that I'm masculine, I'm a construction worker and whatnot, but I'm more into the, you know, let's just do it and get it over with.
Yeah, I don't get the whole games and all that
jazz. Yeah, the thing with her, she was never abused or anything. She's growing up golden child and band girl.
Sometimes that's abuse.
Right. Yeah.
she's a wonderful girl, though. I love her to death.
Well, just think of it this way, that people that need extra levels of arousal in order to feel sexual or to feel satisfied means that parts of their brain may have been overstimulated at some time in their life during development. That's why they need that. That's sort of the correlation.
I have no problem doing it for her, though.
I'm just saying, Anthony, you asked what could it be. I'm telling you what it could be.
What's your
question?
Yeah. My heart. I was prior service military, broke both my legs with 82nd Airborne Division, discharged, and
Hold on.
Did your parachute not open or something?
What'd you say?
Did your parachute not open or something?
No, it opened. I've just had like stress fractures, and one of them just snapped.
Oh, when you landed, your leg snapped?
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy.
Yeah, it wasn't very good. But
was it your femur? Like what snapped?
I didn't want to feel it, so I was kind of in shock for a while.
Which bones? Which bone snapped?
My front, like my right tibia. Yeah. It just went.
Whoa, that's a big one.
That distal third, they don't heal very well either.
No, I was in rehab for about 6 months and healing.
Yeah, legs are bad, right? When you break your leg,
distal tibia is bad. Yeah.
I know a dude who's in a motorcycle accident.
The blood supply's not so hot down there.
Yeah, and he hasn't been the same. He's been in rehab for over a
external
year.
External fixators and stuff, right?
Yeah, because I'm still technically in rehabilitation for it. Like, they say they can take up to 2 years for stress fractures to completely heal.
Wow.
But the thing is, I got a bone scan done eventually, and I had, like, 5 of them from skateboarding for my entire life. And
all right, what's your question? Here we go. Okay. Enough of Anthony's medical history.
Okay, my grandpa, he died when he was 27 from a form of heart disease.
What kind of heart disease?
I have no clue. I have an estranged aunt, and I lived with her, and she doesn't talk about the family. She doesn't tell me anything.
All right.
She got recently diagnosed bipolar. But anyways, after I got back from the military, I've been having really, really high blood pressure, like 160 to 180 over like 90.
Okay.
And they put me on Avapro for a while. And it got to the point where my finances weren't in order, so I couldn't afford to take the medication, and hopefully that'll...
Once you go to your doctor, get samples, and that company samples very, very well. They'll give it to you for free.
Okay. And my second thing about that is after intercourse one time, my heartbeat just all of a sudden went loopy, like thud, 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 thud.
That's love, son.
Thud. Yeah. Do you drink a fair bit?
No, I don't drink at all. I don't do anything.
Okay. Well, that could have just been ventricular arrhythmias or even atrial arrhythmias. That tends to be compensatory pauses after normal arrhythmias. So your heart will go, pause, Pause. If it's all over the place, that's atrial fibrillation. And people can have transient atrial fibrillation for many, many different causes. The fact that your grandfather died of heart disease is a list of 100 things on it that could be. The most common probably being something called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy. That is something you could inherit, and that is something associated with real arrhythmias. So the only way you can really know what's going on, Anthony, is to get something called an echocardiogram and get a treadmill test to make sure you don't have any vascular supply issues to the heart. And then maybe get something called a Holter monitor to see if you have any primary rhythm disturbances. But just to speculate, basically, you know, you have to open up a textbook of cardiology, and yes, there's a million things in there that you could possibly have.
The heart is such a crazy thing because sometimes it just fails, right? I mean, like that John Ritter thing, you could be walking around thinking your heart's fine.
That was an aorta ripped.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, aortic dissection, yeah.
And is that a common thing?
It's pretty rare. It's pretty wild, yeah.
And wasn't he like a fairly active guy?
Yeah, it's a rare. I mean, there's all your body's a funny thing. Things can happen, you know.
Wow.
People in our country, we expect not to be biological, not to have medical problems. We're surprised when somebody has them. Throughout human history, talk about human history.
Yeah.
You could expect to die in childbirth.
Yeah.
You could expect not to live past 40. You could expect to die of an infectious disease. And that's it. That's the way it goes. Okay, good times. Upbeat show of the century here. We got Fear Factory, as we've heard recently, on Tuesday, 8 p.m. NBC. Joe Rogan in here tonight. He can be seen at the House of Blues Saturday, February 4th in Las Vegas. And let's take a quick call here from Casey before we take a break. She, I hope, is 23. Is that you, she?
Yep.
Okay, what's up?
Hi, I won. Joe, by the way, you're awesome. I love you on Fear Factor, the mansion, and everything.
Thank you.
But I just had a question for Dr. Drew about birth control and stuff. I found that a lot of the pills and the shots and stuff, they tend to decrease sexual libido. I was wondering if there's anything that doesn't.
Well, it's different for different women. You got to experiment a little bit. In my experience, the shots and the low-dose pills like Yasmin, that kind of thing, are most likely to screw around with your libido, in my experience. The ones that are less likely, again, in my experience, the ones that are a little more estrogenized or the triphasic pills, though they, too, for some women, can definitely affect libido as well. So you kind of have to try things on for size.
Okay. And how many months would you say to try it before you
One month. Yeah, if you notice it's suppressing libido, you may not be able to find anything that actually increases libido, but if you find it suppressing it, I would go on to the next kind of pill.
Okay.
Okay?
All right, great.
All right, good luck.
Thank you so much. All right, bye-bye.
All right. Fear Factor again, 8 p.m. NBC Tuesdays. Joe Rogan, four-time Massachusetts Taekwondo champion. That to me says a career in comedy.
Yeah. The weird thing about it is that it was so long ago, it doesn't really feel like it was me.
It's like a different life.
It feels like a different life. It really does. I'm 38.
And so when you did that, you must have been in your early 20s.
Yeah, my last fight I had when I was 22.
It's pretty ballsy to dedicate your life to comedy at that age. You know what I mean? And quit
at that age?
Well, to quit all these other things. You had all these disciplines you developed over years. And
well, I've always been the type of person that if I want to do something, I just jump into it, you know, and I don't listen to anybody else, and I don't listen to my parents, and I don't listen, and I didn't, my parents, to my mom.
Oh, they're freaking out,
my mom
sure.
was like, I never thought of you as being very funny. Are you sure you want to do that? But she denies this day, like... Ma, I love you, but you said it.
That's Joe Rogan. The phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. We're going to take a little break. Loveline, we'll be right back.
1-800-LOVE-191. Loveline, we'll be right back.
Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. Joe Rogan in the studio, Tuesday nights, 8 p.m. NBC, the sixth season of Fear Factor, or Fear Factory, as one of our callers just called it. That was very funny. And you can see him at the House of Blues Saturday, February 4th in Las Vegas. That'll be very cool, right?
Yeah, House of Blues is awesome. That's one of my favorite places to perform. And Vegas is always a great place to perform because everybody's just looking to have a good time. You know, it's you don't worry about people getting there, you know, tired from work or they got kids at home. You know, in Vegas, most of the time, everyone's on vacation. Everyone's looking to have fun.
Just want to have a good time.
Yeah.
Do you have anywhere else you're coming up?
I'm at the Comedy Store in Hollywood this weekend, this Friday and Saturday, and... I'm in Denver soon, and I'm all over the place.
Let's talk to...
JoeRogan.net.
Oh, I'm sorry, JoeRogan.net.
Or go to my MySpace page and be my friend. It's myspace.com/talkingmonkey.
Talking monkey.
Because that's what I think all people are.
Nice. Karen, 21.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
This is going to be living proof of talking monkey. What's up, Karen?
Okay, my question is it safe to use an enema?
to for your rectum to kind of, I guess, wash it out.
Is it safe? So you think that they would sell you unsafe products at the grocery store?
No, no. But I mean, to use it for your rectum, you know. I mean, I'm like a douche.
Now, are you cleaning it out for anal sex?
Yes. Yes.
Well, let's before we talk about the safety of the anal sex, let's go back to the safety of an enema. What do you think an enema is for?
With to clean your vagina
rectum.
Out, right?
No, honey, no. That's a douche. An enema.
That's what I said. No, that, yeah. Well, that's what the caller said. That's what it's called.
The caller? Aren't you the caller?
Okay,
referring to yourself in the third person?
You want to use a douche as an enema? Is that what you're saying?
A douche to clean out my rectum.
No. The bottle won't work for that. Use an enema, okay? Fleets makes lots of products for you, Karen. And then when it comes to the anal sex, have you ever done this before?
Yes, I have. But the last time, it didn't go too well.
You had a poopy problem?
Yeah.
Is this your boyfriend's idea or your idea?
It was both of ours.
It's his. Oh, please. Oh, come on. Whose idea was it?
Did you like the feeling?
It was him that kind of more pretty.
Oh, I'm shocked.
That's weird.
Oh,
it was the guy's idea?
The guy's forcing it on you? Are you kidding?
Girls are always begging to jam it in there.
But I was fine with it because I have done it before.
With other guys?
Who forced you to do it. Okay. Yeah.
Did you tell him that?
Yeah, he was aware of that.
Oh, okay, good. He must have felt. Cool. Did you tell him their guys' penises were much bigger than you?
He answered your question. Don't do that.
Karen, what do you do for a living?
I work in retail.
Retail.
What do you sell?
Women's clothing, and I go to school.
Like Victoria's Secrets, or what kind of clothing do you sell?
It's for older women.
That makes it even funnier.
That's hilarious. Like house coats?
St. John knits?
No, it's like a, I guess like a BB, but for more older women, like 40.
BB for older?
So, yeah.
So for MILFs?
Yeah.
You make MILF clothing?
Yeah, you want to put it like
nice.
That. Exactly.
Nice. Or
kind of gets conservative clothing.
Good luck with that enema.
All right, good times. Let's talk to you. Talk to Aaron at 20. Joe Rogan's in the studio. Aaron, what's up?
Hey. Hi.
Hi.
Okay. Quick question. My husband loves Fear Factor. I'm not too big of a fan of it. And
hang on one second, Aaron. Don't you love the way people can't give a compliment without giving a little backhanded?
It doesn't bother me.
But it's funny, though, right? Yeah, my boyfriend loves Fear Factor. I really don't see much in it. But my boyfriend says it's great.
Most people, I think, my theory on it is that most people are not used to people being nice to them, and they're weird about being nice to other people. That they always feel like they, you know.
Like they're defensive.
Like most people work, and when you work, you have a boss, and when you have a boss, you get told what to do, and you don't feel good about it, and very few people are nice to you, and people are tough with those compliments. Life
all right,
sucks.
So Aaron, what's going on?
Okay, well, my husband just recently came back from overseas. He was in the army.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, since he came back, it's like nothing. Beforehand, we used to do all kinds of things together, and our sex life was good and everything. And all of a sudden, now he came back, it's like nothing. It's like he's been back for almost a month now, and I don't know how many times I tried to initiate sex, and he just does not want to.
And what does he tell you is going on with him?
He doesn't talk to me. He just, like, does the same thing. He just either says that he has to work in the morning or either something happened or so.
Like, maybe something happened in Iraq?
I don't know. So I was, like, I was trying to ask him. See, I was figuring it was, like, something with the post-traumatic stress or something.
Right. You can understand, right, that a lot of guys come back with post-traumatic stress, right, Aaron?
Yeah.
Okay. And maybe you want to sort of be a little understanding of that and get him. Is he still living on a base?
Yeah, he is.
Maybe you can get him into the medical services there and see what's going on. Or God knows, maybe there's something related to the vaccines and things he received.
Like we've been trying to have a baby too at the same time. And I don't know. I think there's a lot of things that could issue to it. Well, lately he's been being more resentful towards me because there's a big age difference between me and him.
Yeah, but maybe he's just irritable because he has post-traumatic stress. Aaron, we can't speculate what's going on with him. We're not talking to him. But you can certainly get him into the services there, the medical services, to make sure he's okay, because a lot of things obviously can cause this. This is Alan, 31. Alan, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? We're not talking. Hello?
Alan, you're on with Joe Rogan.
Hey, how's it going?
What's up, dude?
Is this Dr. Drew?
Yes, buddy. What's happening?
Okay, hey, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it. Hey, I just wanted to get some direction. And, hey, Joe, you do an outstanding job on that USC, man.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Wanted to get some direction. just wanted to fill you in 30 seconds or less as in, give you a little background. Bottom line is no dad molested between the ages of 5 and 10. By the time I was 10, I was addicted to coke, had no guidance with any parents. Bottom line is now I'm married and fully addicted to pot, have been ever since I was about 11. Quit cocaine when I was about 17, and can't stay faithful to my wife. And
did you say your dad abused you from 5 to 10?
No, I was molested by neighbors.
Neighbors?
By neighbors.
Okay. And what's the question?
Question is from listening to you so much, I know that my brain has to be misdeveloped. And what kind of drugs can I take that are not that are legal to help me maybe live some sort of a normal life? I'm very insecure.
All right, Alan, this is not something that at this stage of medical history is amenable to medication, though we sometimes will use Seroquel as a medication to help people with agitation and sort of anxiety and whatnot when they have these conditions. But this is addiction, Alan. This is trauma survivorship and addiction. This is the basic sort of bread and butter of what people receive 12-step treatment for. And so if you really want to get better, you got to get yourself in a 12-step program. You got to stop smoking pot. You got to stop going to massage parlors. Maybe you want to go to SA. Maybe you want to go to MA or NA. There's multiple 12-step programs out there. But unfortunately, there's not a medication that will magically make you feel better about yourself, be able to regulate your emotions, and not want to act out sexually or with drugs. That's 12-step.
Okay. And is there any places other than my own doctors that I can go to?
Where do you live?
Madera, California.
Where is that? You know where that is? I would just call local AA, ask for 12-step referrals, say to SA or MA, go to some meetings, get a sponsor, and just start getting connected with that community.
Can I ask you something? Yeah. You've been doing this show for a long time, right? What percentage of people do you think have been molested?
In this country?
Yes.
That data is all over the map. I mean, I've seen data as high as like 20% of women. It's just all over the place. It suffice it to say, one thing for sure, it's millions of people.
It is,
millions.
Definitely.
It may not be tens of millions, but it's millions.
Okay, what do you think is the cause of it? Do you think it's a repeated offense thing? I mean, it's
somebody that has been sexually abused.
Right.
Let's just use sexual abuse, because physical abuse is even more. Right, I mean, that's everywhere, right?
Sure.
So sexual abuse, you have about a 60% chance of that person then becoming a perpetrator themselves. Okay, so over half become perpetrators. So already there's growth there, right? Well, okay. Now, that person that becomes a perpetrator, you think they act out once? They're into kids.
Right. So
if you were into kids sexually, lots of them. Ugh. And so that builds the exponential growth into this thing. And now that society's sort of social, sexual boundaries are broken down, there's nothing to contain it. It's all over the place.
What's your take on this whole Michael Jackson thing?
I don't want to say anything pejorative, but let's put it this way. Everyone knows he was treated for opiate addiction in London. What was that, 10 years ago? Opiate addiction is a chronic illness. It doesn't go away magically.
Uh-huh.
It's the rest of your life. And you must work a program every day or you will be back on drugs. So, just saying.
But what about the molestation?
I don't have a strong opinion about that. Mm-hmm. Although I'll tell you, there's a...
I love that expression. I don't have a strong opinion.
but I'll tell you what, a friend of mine, as an analyst, said he's the only pedophile that doesn't work at a carnival. He actually has the carnival at his house. so, I mean, that's, just saying.
Oh, that's hilarious.
But I actually don't have a strong opinion whether he did it. He clearly, I will tell you, but the people who are pedophiles love and idealize kids the way he does. They just, they think they love them so much, but then it just goes sexual. This is an interesting call from Eugene, who's in Spain. Eugene.
Hello?
It's a delay. Hey, Eugene, what's happening? Where are you calling from?
From a small town near Barcelona.
Wow.
How do you get the show?
I get it from a website, and yeah, I play it on my MP3.
Wow.
Awesome.
Day late. Yeah.
Is there, do you get to see Joe Rogan on Fear Factor in Spain?
I don't think so.
No. Joe who? Well, that's great. That's interesting. So what do you think of this show? Joe was talking about the decline of America and American culture. What do you think of this show when you're listening from Spain?
I wasn't listening to tonight's show yet.
He gets it 2 days later.
No, I understand, but I'm just curious how you perceive this program in general, given where you sit and the culture you live in. How does this all look to you?
Oh, I can tell you because I don't know what the program is about. What is it about?
No, that's not what he's asking. What he's asking is, you living in Spain, how do you feel about America and our silly behavior?
Oh, I don't know.
It's like we're talking to someone on the moon.
Yeah,
we're kind of silly. We're kind of silly over here, too.
People are silly everywhere, right?
What do you think of this radio program, this talk show?
Oh, I like it. I don't know if everyone's molested in Spain as well, but...
we were just talking about that.
It happens a lot
here.
You
haven't even heard tonight's show, and we were just discussing that right before you called. How serendipitous.
Yes, that it's very common out here, and it makes people have screwed up relationships and screw up their own kids.
Yeah, yeah. I've been listening to the show for a year already, and I'm kind of... When I get a chance, I'm asking people, like, do you think people is molested when they're growing up, girls? And sometimes I get different opinions, but I don't think it happens in Spain that much as I hear in Loveline.
Interesting. I think it's on epidemic proportions here in this country. I'm sure it happens elsewhere, but it's just out of control here.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. It's just because you know why? Because we live in this sort of bizarre sort of you cannot judge kind of. I can't judge. Whatever you're into, and we live in this sort of as sexually repressed as we are as a society. The reality is we sort of compensate for that by going, well, whatever you're into. You're into, it's cool, whatever you're into. And we don't call people on their S and go, hey, cut that out. That's not okay. That's sick. You're effing people up when you do that. You're screwing yourself up. This is what's going to happen to you when you've had those problems, so you must get treatment before you hurt somebody. It's not okay to be into just anything. It's just a preference.
You think that the reason why people are molested because people think it's okay to be into anything? I mean, really? Really think?
I think in other countries they go, hey, that means something about you. You got to look into that. Here we go. Whatever you're into, it's all cool. Whatever.
But when people find out that people have molested people in this country, now, they're pretty shunned.
Of course, and you notice there's more and more discussion about. Listen, I've been doing this show for 20 years, been talking about it. I'm only hearing public discussions about it as a serious issue for the last maybe 24 months. Before that, it was, I think it's always been there. We're just identifying it. We're just talking about it more now.
That's
I've heard
really
that for years, and I think that's BS, and the problem is accelerating, not getting better. And finally, people are going, we have to do something. We have to have legal actions. We have to have structures around this stuff. In the past, it's always, you know, you like to get choked. That's cool. Whatever. You like to have somebody whip you. Oh, whatever. You like to dress up like a pony and have Cinderella's carriage pull that behind you. Oh, whatever. No, it's not whatever. It's fine. I'm not going to judge you for it. You go do whatever. But it means something, and we need to understand what that means.
It's just amazing to me how many people have experienced something horrible in their past. I dodged molestation twice when I was
really?
A kid. Yeah, once by a guy at the library, and the librarian recognized him. I was like 8. My parents were hippies, and they kind of let me do whatever I want. You
that's
know?
How,
I,
that's
and
I lived good in, victims then.
From age 7 to 11, I lived in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
And, they used to just let me loose. I was a little kid. I mean, it's amazing thinking about that today. Yeah. But some guy who had just gotten out of jail
but again,
for something
that was like, hey, whatever. Yeah. Whatever people are into. You know, kids, they when they're independent, they want to live by themselves. It's fine. Let them, you know, not a sense that, hey, stuff happens. People, you know, people need containment. People need structure. People need treatment when they've been trying. I mean, I feel horrible for people that feel those kinds of impulses. And they don't. they're not happy about it, believe me.
No, they're not.
It's awful. But let's not go, hey, whatever you're into. Let's kind of help people with this stuff.
Well, I mean, but the recidivism rate is like, isn't it like 90-something percent or something like that?
Well, it's like trying to, not in really good treatment, first of all.
So there's treatment for child molestation that actually is effective?
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, it's kind of like trying to convince you out of the kind of woman that you're attracted to. You know what I mean? Imagine that. Like, we have to kind of
break
you of that. Well, it does, because it comes from a place of trauma. It comes from a place of you know, the trauma that can be sort of reintegrated. It's a part of the self that gets kind of walled off. And it, like we've talked about it, the things that are terrorizing in childhood are things that we become immensely attracted to in adulthood. We sexualize them. If it's traumatizing to us, it becomes attractive as an adult.
Wow.
Sexual. You become like driven to it. It's wild, huh?
It's very wild.
Barcelona, Eugene's calling from tonight. I hope you, let's start an international discussion about all this. It'd be awesome. Joe Rogan in the studio. And Joe, thank you for taking me on a trip tonight. We've gone from sensory deprivation tanks to DMT to molestation.
Some of it was off the air.
We started with anal sex. We've gone to fisting. Is there anything else we're going to talk about tonight? And when Eugene
Silly
hears this
Spaniards.
Show, when Eugene hears this show in 2 days in Barcelona, he's going to freak out. Phone number here is 1-800-LOVE-191. We got still some good calls lined up here. Joe Rogan will be in Las Vegas Saturday, February 4th. House of Blues. Do not miss that. Fear Factory airs on Tuesday, 8 o'clock on NBC, and we're going to take a little break. Be right back with you.
Hello, this is your radio. Loveline will be right back.
Here we go. It's Loveline, 1-800-LOVE-191. We are having a whirlwind evening with Joe Rogan. Like I said, fisting, anal sex, DMT, sensory deprivation, anthropologists from Mars. Let's take a quick call for Joe. It's Jasmine, 31.
Hey, Dr.
Yeah, man.
How are you? I actually have a question for the both of you. I'll start off with Joe. I watch your show a lot, and I enjoy it, and I kind of noticed that you flirt a lot with the youngins there, and I was wondering, do you get dates?
It's his job, Jasmine. It's his job.
You think I flirt a lot with the youngins?
I do notice it. You do, well, youngins, I don't mean youngins, but I mean with the girls, you do flirt.
In what way do
the
I
The strippers,
flirt?
You mean. He means the strippers.
They're waitresses.
Strippers.
Do you get any
students.
Numbers? Do you go out with any of the contestants?
No, I don't. But I've heard people say that before, and I don't see it. I mean, maybe I'm just friendly. I'm not. I mean, to me, flirting is like sexual advances, you know, commenting on someone's body, commenting on how attractive they are, something like that. I never do anything like that.
Oh, you don't, but kind of body language,
kind of body language. Maybe you're just reading into it, you freak.
I have a question about you, too.
Yes.
You were talking about molestation and things like that. My little brother, we were living back in Pakistan for a while, and I come from a Muslim background. And my mom hired him a tutor to learn how to read the Quran. And it was a religious guy who worked at the he was pretty well known at the mosque near our house. And he molested my brother as he was reading him the Quran.
Wow.
And, and he told my cousin, and my cousin told us about it. And they wouldn't let me confront the guy. My grandmother, literally, she locked the door and stood in front of it and would let me go out. And we never really talked to him about it. I feel really guilty. And I don't know, like, what to say or how to even bring it up without embarrassing him.
You never talked to your brother about it, or you never talked to the perpetrator about it?
No, I never got a chance to talk to the perpetrator, but I'm about my brother now. He's 15 now, and just hearing about all the different things that can happen psychologically to kids, I kind of want to bring it up, but I'm not sure of how to do that without
just bring it up. Well, listen, just give him an opportunity to talk about it. Sometime when it's quiet, non-threatening, you're spending time with him alone, just say, look, you may not know this, but I'm aware that this happened. And if you ever want to talk about it or want some help with it, him talking about it, Jasmine, is not going to do much. You really need to take him to some help about it. And he's definitely going to need it. So please.
It's amazing how common it is that religious people do that. It's amazing.
Yes, that's crazy. Now back to the talking monkey anthropologist. Yeah. What the hell's that?
Yeah.
Amy, 17.
Hey, have some questions about, I'm 17 and I'm dating a 23-year-old and, well, not really dating, we're friends and benefits. And all my friends say I should dump him and he treats me like crap, but.
What's there to dump? You don't have a relationship. You're just, he doesn't like you. He's just having sex with you. How can you dump that?
Well, like, stop it.
Okay, then just stop it then.
But I don't want to. And he acts like he doesn't, like in the beginning of every...
Of course, Amy, of course he doesn't want to. He's having sex.
Yeah.
That's all he's into this for. Do not kid yourself. Friends with benefit is there because guys don't like you in the way that you like them, but they want to keep having sex. And sometimes girls turn it around and do the same thing. But guys do this all the time.
How does he treat you bad?
Well, a couple months ago, I would bring him lunch and stuff, and then like I'd call him after work, and I thought it was maybe because I called him too much, and so he just stopped calling me, or he wouldn't answer his phone.
You're falling in love with this guy. You feel like you have a relationship with him. He is just having sex, Amy. Can you get that through your head?
No, I don't want to.
Right, you don't want to, but that's what's happening here. That you've described this as friends with benefits.
Well, how long you guys been dating?
That's what he's doing. Not just what he wants. That's what you've got with him. How long you been doing this?
Since July.
And just how long going to keep the misery going?
I don't know. I just keep on hoping that maybe something will happen.
Impossible.
Why?
Joe, tell me. Guys don't do that. They don't switch from friends with benefits after mistreating her like this. He's suddenly going to become a boyfriend?
Yeah, it's pretty unlikely, and especially since he's 23 and you're 17.
He's a criminal, yeah, too, on top of that.
The fact that a 23-year-old guy would even be attracted to a 17-year-old girl.
Creepy.
It should be that he talks to you and he goes, oh, my God, this is like a little kid. Yeah. Let me just be nice to her, and maybe one day
when you're 20,
I can bang her.
Right. That's the way Joe would think.
That's
when
the
you're 23,
healthy approach.
The Joe Rogan approach.
21.
When you're 23 and you look back, you look at a guy your age, a peer of yours dating somebody in high school, you will retch. You'll be shocked.
Yeah. It's even weirder. Yeah, the gap is not that big a gap. You know, it's only 6 years. You know, when one guy's 36 and the girl's 30, it's no big deal.
Different.
But man, it's a huge difference.
All right, Amy, snap out of it. Snap out of it. Tell your parents. They'll take care of this. Guy
will
go to jail.
Find a 17-year-old dude.
Guy will go to jail in a second. You've got a criminal on your hands. Oh, my God. Somehow tonight I feel sort of overwhelmed and in pain from all this, right?
Really?
Yeah,
how do you not constantly feel like that if you do this all the time?
It just, you know.
Every time I do this show, I always go, oh, yeah, I forgot what this is like. I forgot how screwed up people are. I haven't done it in years, and the last time I did it, I remember being all bummed out, like sitting here going, whoa.
Well, you got to talk about anal sex and fisting. Come on, it's not that bad.
We did get some fisting talk in there.
We're going to take a little break again. Be right back.
We'll be right back. Loveline, we'll be right back.
That about does it for another episode of Loveline. Joe Rogan, thank you very much for coming in here
tonight.
Thank
you very much for having me.
It's joerogan.net or also on MySpace.
MySpace.com/talkingmonkey.
I'm going to visit you there. It sounds like an interesting spot.
Okay.
Well, I mean,
MySpace is pretty weird.
The guy that called in tonight was interesting. The guy from Newport. All right. It's Tuesday, 8 o'clock, NBC. That's Fear Factor, or as our callers call it, Fear Factory. You can see Joe performing stand-up, House of Blues, Saturday, February 4th in Las Vegas. Should be a great show. And thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And
appreciate
until next
it.
Time, it's Dr. Drew saying goodnight and stay well.
This has been Loveline. Loveline. The opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, sponsors, or the station. The producer for Loveline is Annie Golden. Loveline is a presentation of Westwood One Entertainment.